And welcome to the Dice Cabinet, a safe space for your spiciest tabletop takes. I'm your Secretary of Spice, Max Weinberg. My pronouns are he, him, and today we've got a very special panel ready to share their spiciest takes with you. First up, our first returning panelist. They are the Director of Production and Creative Development at Twice Rolled Tales and the creator of Burning Down the Goat and Tabletop Gone Mad, the Secretary of Collaboration, it's Linny Schell!
Hey, glad to be here,
Glad to have you. And then next, he's the award-winning game designer behind games like Rom-Com, Drama Bomb, Project Echo, and The Time We Have. He's also a co-founder and producer of Many-Sided Media, the Secretary of Sadness. It's Elliot Davis.
Oh, I'm so sad. Hello. Just kidding. I'm not sad. I'm excited to be here.
How's everyone doing today?
You know, here we are in the most positive sense.
Great. So how this all works, one of us will present their take, then in the ensuing free-for-all, all of the secretaries will go back and forth digging into the take to determine how spicy we think it is. Then we'll all rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being Pepto-Bismol and 10 being a Naga Viper. At the end of the show, we'll tally up the scores and crown the spiciest take. Anyone have any questions?
All good.
Awesome. Well, before we were doing this, Elliot stated his take, and we all really were chomping at the bit. So I think, if that's okay, Elliot, you want to go first?
Yeah. All right. My TTRPG hot take is that no game needs a what is a TTRPG section in it. I think it is a waste of text. I think is it a waste of time. I don't care how funny you are about it. I never want to see another what is an RPG section in a TTRPG book.
Okay, point of clarification and order. Are you saying just get straight into it? Or do you think that it is valuable to have a what is this TTRPG section?
Oh, I think what is this game is very important to your game. Mm-hmm. This is kind of where it gets spicier as you dig deeper on this, is that I think that if your game needs it, the rest of it isn't doing enough work.
Like it's one of those of like, if you have to like explain the joke was not good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I fully agree with you, but also I'm thinking of all of the new kind of existing IPs that are creating TTRPGs around them. Like, for instance, like Cosmere from Brandon Sanderson's universe. Like, someone who's read and loves those books might pick up this rule book and really have only do it because they love Mistborn.
Right.
They might need to know what a RPG is.
Yeah.
You know?
They need to know, but I don't think they need to know. I don't think they need the broader context. I don't think anybody picking up an individual game needs to be told the broader context of what it is. When I open up a video game, it does not have a screen that comes up that goes, the following experience is a video game. It's like a different game, but you play it on your TV screen. Like, that would be insane.
But like a video game, you can interface only in ways that you play a video game, right? Like, you have to go to a video game store. Like, you have to interact with it a lot of the time by putting it into a video game player. So, like, you have to sort of know what it is before you even begin. Whereas the TTRPG, like, you can pick up a book and then find out it's a game simultaneously.
Yeah, I don't care if you write that it's a game. Like, I don't want to hide the fact that it's a game. You know what I mean? Like, it's I think it's the idea of, like what you said before, Linny, of saying, if I open up the Cosmere RPG and it says, and I read, what is this? And it says, this is a game in which you embody characters from the Cosmere. I'm like, cool, sick. I never want to read, this is an RPG that says, you've probably heard of a little game called Dungeons and Dragons. This is like that, but different. It's like, no, don't do that. I want to read about your thing. It's ultimately like, I want the text of your game to be about your game. I never want it to be broader context. I want it to just be like, I want somebody who picks up the Cosmere RPG because they're a Cosmere fan to then play it, have a great time, and then go, oh my god, wait, there are more of these, when they become a freak about it, you know? That's my ideal hope for someone picking up a game.
Yeah, so I mean, that like, that makes sense. Do you think ever that like it does create a discoverability issue, right? If you're like, where do I go to get the next thing of these if you don't live somewhere where there's a game shop? And like Max was saying, you only bought this as an association with like a different property.
Sure. I guess, do I think that kind of section solves that problem? No, I don't think, I think that if you have found, if the Cosmere RPG has dropped from the sky into your hands and you play it and you enjoy it, you read it and you enjoy it, I think that with the power of the internet and the power of, you know, community, hopefully if you're playing the Cosmere RPG, you have a community of friends that you're playing with, somebody is able to then find the fact that other games like this exist. And hopefully it's through a local game store. I would much rather have you get anything that's in a What Is It RPG section from somebody who works at a local game store. Mm. When you go, hey, what is this? I'm a Cosmere fan. Like, that's way more special and impactful and kind of helping people in my mind.
I feel like the... Max, again, I keep stepping on you.
We are in different locations. It happens.
What?
You're not in my
upstairs home? We're not around a cabinet? We're not, like, this is not a cabinet meeting with an official board table.
Oh my God, the illusion is fading. I'm so scared.
So I, obviously, Elliot, I think you read a lot more rule books than I do. And the one that I can remember reading, the What Is an RPG book, was from the Die RPG.
Yes.
That's the one that I think about, which is, for those who don't know, is Die RPG is based on a comic book about being Jumanji'd into this TTRPG world. And it's great, and you should check it out, both the book and the game. But I do remember sitting there being like, why would I ever need to read this? I read it kind of almost like hate reading it.
Yeah.
To be like, is there anything I need to know in here that I already don't know as someone who has played hundreds of hours of games? And I'm sorry, Kieran, you're great, but there was not. There was nothing in there that I needed.
It's fun that you brought up Die RPG, because I'm going to talk myself away from my own take here, because I'm going to say that Die RPG is an interesting case because it is so about the meta context of Dungeons and Dragons and like and old school fantasy role playing as a concept that like Kieran being cheeky about what is an RPG in that section, I'm like, I might allow that through the gate I have put up against this.
How do you feel about this is a GM, how to GM sections that like explain to you the overarching concept? Ooh, overarching concept.
I do. That's interesting. It's another thing where like I will always prefer the GMing section that is about this is how you run this game versus telling me about what running a game in general means. Like, I really, that's, I guess, like the whole core of the take here is I want somebody to like figure out, learn what GMing is because they become a good die GM. And then they're like, oh, I can do this for other games. Like, yeah, I guess I just am not interested in like the broad context being in someone's game. Like, I want the most juicy, specific flavor possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as interesting to stand up and say, here is the artistic intent of the thing I'm doing, or here is the joke, or here is how a joke works, when at this point, maybe it's just about being brave enough to trust that people know what things are now, that it's not like the first time they may have encountered this at all in any capacity and have no ability to figure any of this out, you know? Like, your game should be enough.
Elliot, do you find that this is a really rampant, quote, problem that you're seeing in all of the books
I
want to
say
reading?
That I think it is less common than it was 4 or 5 years ago. Like, I feel like when I first got into buying RPGs, it was in a lot of them, and I think I see it less these days. Like, or I have just curated down the kinds of games I play to where it's where it's less common. But like, I think the thing you're talking about, Linny, of like trust that people know things, this is like my broader take about art and actual play, which we both do, and games and writing, is that like we're always going to be better off when we trust our audience a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like, you're always going to make something stronger when you don't fall back on that instinct that I think is like a commerce-based instinct sometime of like the audience is dumb and needs to be told what to, like, reminded of stuff. Or like, I always joke when we were like in production on a show and we needed to establish that two characters were siblings. And I said, what we are not doing is having either of them call each other brother or sister in this conversation. Like, absolutely not. That is one of my least favorite things I ever see in movie and TV is when somebody was like, come on, bro. And it's like, oh, wow, they're siblings. It's like, there's so many better ways to do that. So yeah, trust your audience. That's the core here.
Yeah. It feels like the function that, like, what am I trying to say? That a lot of times it feels like what they're trying to do is establish themselves outside of like D&D as well. I think you're touching on this. And it feels like the place for that is, I think I've seen it a couple of games. I think maybe in your game as well, which is like a game's that inspired this work, like a list of games that are similar. And it's like, if you want to place it within context, like that's a great way of doing it. You're giving people roads to things, but you're doing it within like the structure of your game.
Totally. Yeah. I love an acknowledgments of the inspiration, like wear your inspirations on your sleeve. And like, especially like, I think I've put it in the back of the book for a couple games and it's always like, hey, so you're done with this game. You want more cool stuff? Here's why this game exists.
Well, with that, why don't we get to ranking it? There's only two of us, so this is going to be some really easy math. When you add a third, a fourth person, sometimes the math gets a little tricky, but this will be great. Linny, what would you like to rank Elliot's take of your book does not need a what is an RPG section?
I feel like solidly a five in that I definitely fully agree with this take, but I feel like there's going to be a lot of people who err on the side of explaining things to people who might disagree. So I think that sort of averages out.
I also very much agree. I think it's unfortunately, sorry, like, I don't think it's that spicy. I might even go kind spicy. Of like a four.
Yeah.
Just don't tell the audience that.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. The kayfabe, the illusion, it's falling around me.
I'm going to give it a four. I think it's still because it is somebody thinks it's really important, but yeah, you're playing a game. It should say game on the front, which should kind of give you an idea that it's a game. And then the rest will tell you what you need to do. Your work should stand on its own. Cool. Well, that's an easy average right there. That's just 4.5.
Woo.
So, you know, it's middle of the road.
Yeah, it's like a pickled jalapeno, maybe.
A pickled jalapeno is a perfect description for what this take is. Linny, you wanna go next?
Yeah, okay. Mine is a kind of a strictly actual play take, but my take is when you're looking at actual play, video or audio, the more that you remove crosstalk or talking about mechanics or anything that's like above the table, and the more you focus in on performance, the more you risk making a bad movie or a bad audio drama, and you should just go make an audio drama or a movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is tough because I largely agree with this take. Yeah. And like, that's even coming from someone who, like, we make a pretty highly edited actual play, but it's not highly edited to remove all that stuff. It's highly edited to like make that stuff hit. Like some of my favorite moments from making AP is like when the big moment is everyone freaking out about the mechanic. And I feel like for the big shows like Dimension 20, that's so true too. So I'm like pretty on board like with this.
Yeah.
I agree. I think almost wholeheartedly with you, but I think that this is a spicy take in the grand scheme of things. I think there are absolutely people who would disagree with you. And how I think about it is I almost look at it like a first draft of a script.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you can do can be an amazing idea and an amazing structure, but you got to take those words. If you want to do an audio drama, you got to cut some words from it. You got to make it just a little tighter and a little bit more specific than some of the stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there might be like two or three people in the world who can do the first pass and it'd be like the best thing that they can do. And it'd be really great.
The three of us.
and they're all on this call.
Yeah, no. But I just don't think that for anyone else that there is a world in which a second draft is not going to be stronger than your first improvised draft. And so it's like what is strong about actual play is like the other stuff around it being added to it, and it's that second layer. I think it might just be also very niche within actual play that is like developing right now, where there's a lot more focus on performance and trying to bring out more like different ways of artistically representing actual play. And like, we're doing a lot of stuff that's on its feet. Like, it's filmed much more like a short film, like a movie. And so we constantly are asking ourselves, like, are we making a bad movie here? Have we forgotten?
Interesting, good actual play.
What is the line for you, Linny? Where is something getting left in versus what is getting taken out?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And one that I think we're still figuring out, but I feel like the layer is, when you're watching something happen, are you also gaining an understanding of why the person behind the character is making that choice? And I think a lot of that, you can front load that if you don't necessarily like want to have it constantly in or out with the moment, especially if you're doing something where people are going to be in character a fair amount of time. But yeah, I think it's, if it's like, do you just see the character for great lengths of time, or do you get to see what's under the hood, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that, Max, you bring up the line, because my, like, the only part where I start to get like, this is a hot take, is I'm like, I watch this take get used sometimes to make bad art decisions is like what I feel like happens, is that it's like, the answer to this take is not, do not edit your thing. You know what I mean? It's like, that is like, it's like there is a probably a bell curve, really, is what it ends up looking at, like, where it's like, too little editing is bad, too much editing is bad. There's a sweet spot depending on like the intention and goals of your project and how good your performers are. If you know you've got like best in class performers, you probably can handle, you know, cutting more out. But that's where I start to get like, where I get itchy about takes like this, even though I fully agree with the spirit of it, is like, don't then use that as an excuse to not think about what you're leaving in and taking out. Like, that's like ultimately the thing, is like, think about it. Why is it there? Why is it interesting? Why does it further the goal of the project?
Yeah, I think it's very much a response to like the tendency, once people start editing, to keep editing and keep going. And it's like, too much of a good thing. It's a bell curve, exactly as you say.
It's also the I think of, when we talk about leaving things in and taking things out, I actually had a big discussion with Kendo.
I was just about to bring up Kendo as well. Yeah.
Go check it out. It's from a couple of years ago, with Kendo from Tales Yet Told, where we talked about kind of the spectrum of actual plays and what that is. And so thinking about something like Friends at the Table, which leaves in everything, and it's so much of like the specificity of, why am I leaving this in? You're not just leaving it in to leave it in. You're leaving it in because, what does this add to the story? Not the narrative necessarily, but the story of the whole project that you are creating. Yeah. And what does that add or take away from it?
Yeah. I was also talking to Kendo about this, specifically in the context of like solo RPGs, and I definitely did change my mind on this a little bit, because, you know, they basically pointed out that a lot of what happens in a solo RPG happens inside of a person's head. And so, like, it's a very faithful capture of an experience to have someone playing a solo RPG never verbalize aloud what they're actually doing. So I think that's the one. But I think it goes back to, like, are you faithfully capturing what's happening, not attempting to cut things out to make it look more like a different type of media, which it is not, you know?
Yeah, which is a great point, that this is also like so dependent on game, you know what I mean? Like, is the game you're playing fun and interesting and compelling to hear those mechanics like really acknowledged at the table? Like, I feel like, to bring up a take, Max, you brought up off mic about like success randomizers, it's like, I think success randomizer systems are really satisfying to hear a lot of the mechanics on tape. Like, you like hearing the nat 20 is just like a famously exciting delightful thing, whereas like to pull from my own work, like the time we have, acknowledging the card you pulled is not necessarily like the thing that is going to be the most interesting. Like, seeing it or like reading it aloud, like that's where you're getting the mechanics of it, but being like, and I've pulled a card, like is not necessarily like the kind of mechanical talk that you're going to want from an actual play.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like both these takes have just been like, there's a balance.
There's a balance. It's nuance, damn it. God damn it. Oh, there, no, nuance.
Once again, this is the dice the dice cabinet. This is not a space for nuance.
Lenny and I are the dice really thoughtful is about a space our for nuance.
Opinions, I think, unfortunately. I'm curious, because, Lenny, this is a thing that I think discussed with you at one point, where I was like, you're doing more site stuff. Do you ever just find yourself wanting to make a short film? And you were like, no, this is actual play. So when it comes to these site specific ones, I'm like, I do want to know where that line is for you.
Yeah, I think definitely part of that conversation was like, Elliot, you can't be asking me if I want to do a different thing, because I will start thinking about doing it. I'm already doing too many goddamn things. Yeah, I mean, I think I just find that, like, the documentary aspect of it so fascinating that if I ever were to do something else, it'd be more along that line rather than the, because I never have, like, a particular story I want to tell. I always just want to explore a theme and how people feel about something at the end of the day. And so the actual play is a great way of doing that. But I think for me, what happens is people get really caught up in being a character when they're on their feet and acting like that. And so they forget to do a lot of the things that we have sort of ingrained in ourselves as performers. When you sit on, like, around a table, like, they forget to verbalize what they're doing or thinking. In a way, I think we've just not realized we have set as a standard for actual play rather than it being, like, instinctive. And then there's this like pressure because we conceptualize actual play as a sitting thing, that when you stand, well, that's just in character, because standing is, like, is an acting thing. And so I think it's very much like an open question of how to, like, are we looking to develop a sort of shared understanding of what it looks like to stand up and act and do an actual play? Or is it something that's really just going to need to be very specific? Because I'm doing stuff right now where it's like breaking that up in different types of ways. I don't know if that actually answered your question.
There's an interesting thing you're making me realize, where I'm like, that line between character and not, I feel like, would be so much harder to navigate just on the individual performer level when you're in, like, an on-site actual play, is because my impulse as a performer would be like, oh, I'm never leaving character. But what, like, you're getting at, like, what makes AP interesting is that the other players get excited about a move you make. And so, like, where, how do you signal that change? That's challenging.
Yeah. That's stay tuned in about, like, 8 months, like 6 to 8 months when our actual plays start coming out, because we've got a lot of answers to that question. I think it's be interesting to see what people think of them.
To not put another idea in your head, Lenny, I know this might be a little meta, but what if you did a documentary style actual play that was watching another game being played?
I have this whole actual play I want to do, which is from the perspective of the film crew that's doing an actual play.
That's very good.
Basically, what it has come down to is, like, I think director's commentaries can be interesting because you care about what the director has to say. And I think the idea of watching someone else watch actual play is only interesting in the same way that actual play is only interesting, in that whoever is doing the talking, you have to care about what they're saying and what context they're bringing to what they say. So in terms of, like, a documentary style stuff, it would be like, well, what is the framing of why we're doing this and what it's being said? I think there is already some people who are talking about doing, and I can't remember who at the moment, but there's definitely at least a couple people already putting stuff out like this, where it's much more like reality TV style, where you have the actual players doing the actual play happening, and then, like, they will intercut to thoughts about what's happening.
We tried to do that
for
a little bit for our Thank God It's Doomsday, where it was kind of like a workplace mockumentary style thing, where we had to figure out in an audio only format how to do the talking head cameras.
That's cool.
I think, like, stuff like that is, my suspicion is that actual play, the way you film actual play will start to look like the way we film movies, in which you have to have the camera and your format fit the story you're trying to tell. Otherwise, there's going to be an incongruity there. And it's just the relative lack of like videos that exist in this format that means people don't pick up on that if it's happening. And so like that thing will work if it makes sense for the game and for the story and for the intent. But I don't think it will be an interesting, necessarily a format that will be like universally interesting.
Right, right.
Well, Elliot, shall we rank this take?
Yeah, I'm gonna give this a solid 6 because for me it is not that spicy, but I know how spicy it is from industry awareness and also that because of my upper limits on it as an absolute thought.
I think for this one, because I wholeheartedly agree with it, I'm going to do an industry one and I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
I'm going to give it an 8, actually. Just kidding. I'm going to give it an 8. I think it is really spicy. At least right now in the world that in the actual play space that we are living in right now, it might change. But right now I think it's an 8 because there is a lot of great stuff going on. But I feel that some of this great stuff going on is a great audio drama as opposed to a great actual play of a game. And that's not a judgment on either of those mediums. It is just a different thing.
Totally.
So that evens out to 7.
All right.
This episode was brought to you by the World Builders Club, a project of Working Families Power, an organization building power for the multiracial working class. The World Builders Club is your go-to dispatch for breaking down the political, cultural, and emotional architecture behind your favorite universes. From romantasy novels and TTRPGs to blockbuster franchises and indie gems, this isn't just pop culture analysis. It's a love letter to the art of creating worlds and the power those worlds have to shape our own. As an actor, I really loved their blog about how Darth Maul from the Star Wars saga incorporates the tropes of Shakespeare's villains, fools, and tragic heroes into this big sci-fi epic. Join the club and build a better world with them by subscribing to bit.ly/WBCManySided or by searching World Builders Club on Substack. You're not going to want to miss it.
Hey, I'm Dre Silvertooth and I'm a GM. You should absolutely come listen to our podcast, because I have the best heroes. They're hunting curses for the Queen of Vire, and it's going great.
I got 5 hit points.
I have a plan.
Is it to write my eulogy?
They make really good choices.
Oh God, why did I do that?
It's all according to plan. Textbook success.
How do you cram a werewolf through a 1.5-foot diameter ring?
Creatively.
Okay, so maybe not. Textbook.
Try to remain calm.
Fine. They are bad heroes. I have very bad heroes on my podcast. But they are hilarious. Come check us out at badheroescast.com or find Bad Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
In the far reaches of the world, under a lost and lonely hill, lies the forgotten Tomb of Corridors and all its many ills. This labyrinthine crypt, filled with monsters, traps, and treasure, seeks to destroy your mortal form and seal your soul forever. Originally called Tomb of Horrors, based off the original created in 1979, included in my version of Tomb of Corridors will be its own background information, a legend of the tomb as it relates to the land of Hyrenor, and quite a few unserious hijinks. I'm Amelia Somm, and I will be your dungeon master. Embarking within the tomb, we also have
Haley as the Queen's Ravens,
Stella Jo as the Sacrificial Sisters of Alpha Kappa Mori,
Cyrus as a lesbian who keeps coming back wrong.
New episodes release on Mondays, wherever you get your podcasts.
So my take is that if you presenting me with a solo journaling game and your game does not have a randomized success mechanic, whether that's dice, Jenga, cards, a coin, something that's random, you are just giving me essay prompts and not a game.
Now, okay, I want to examine something within this take. When you say randomized success mechanic, is a randomizer that gives you a random prompt not that? You mean it needs to be a success fail state?
Yeah, I think the action that you are taking, there should be a... You are not the determiner of if my action succeeds.
Okay.
You can, like, I can decide to whatever the is given to me, I can decide to take an action, but I don't go, and I win at the same time.
Fascinating. Many solo journaling games are not games then. Then they're just essay prompts.
I didn't say it.
So this is a fun thing where I'm like, does it matter to me? Because I don't think I agree. I also have a dog in this fight. I've written a solo game that does not have a success mechanic. Project Echo is just several randomized prompt generators that how they interplay to an ending is sort of the determining of where your ending is. And so there's randomization in that way, but it's more of like an... Mm-hmm. Zoomed out randomization.
I am less familiar with Project Echo than I should be.
You're fine. Don't worry,
especially with
it.
You on this call. what are those randomized props looking like?
Yeah, so in Project Echo, there are six different devices. They are powered by a bunch of different game pieces, including six-sided dice, playing cards, tarot cards. As you play, you use those randomizers to get prompts. And then as you play, a lot of the prompts are just, here is a prompt for your story. And then some of them are, here is a special kind of prompt that is either encountering one faction within the story or another. And when you get to six in either of those directions, you go to the ending prompt of the game. And depending on whether you have your coin, you do flip your coin at the end, and that determines what ending prompt you get. So there is randomization in that, but there is no, I would say there is no success failure. Success and failure comes from the player in that game. You could write yourself to be the baddest motherfucker and that the response to every prompt is that, like, yeah, but I win. Like, so it's interesting because it's structured. Mm-hmm. It's structured storytelling, but is it a game? I don't know.
Yeah, because... like, I'm thinking about this in the context of, like, when you're playing a game with more people, like, success and failure is determined by something completely outside of your control, even if there's not a lot of, like, outside of your complete control, even if there aren't a lot of, like, mechanics making it so. And I'm trying to figure out if I think that this also applies here, but... I don't know, but you can play games with your, like, you know, you can play games inside your head. This seems, I don't know.
So the example I will give is, I've been playing a lot of Astro Prisma recently. I think it's great. I got the book right here. And even in the book, the recommended way of playing is journaling mode. Mm-hmm. But within the game, you're rolling dice to determine if you succeed in the randomized situations that arise. And what you're doing, this is not a value judgment on these, because if I want to get a prompt for writing a narrative, to me, that's doing, I'm writing a narrative. That's writing a story. That's different than playing a game to write a story.
But like, it's like, but I don't know. I feel like when I'm writing and I'm looking for prompts, the difference between a prompt and a game is that the prompt doesn't have any internal artistic statement or internal point that it's trying to make. Its point is to be like a blank canvas upon which I can write my ideas. Like, it's a jumping off point. And the difference between like a solo game is like everyone could take those series of prompts and in theory kind of sit down and examine their own experiences and sort of reconstitute some artistic intent from the author, like that there would be a central connection between all of them that isn't true for just an essay prompt.
So you're creating the conflict.
Right. But like what I'm saying is that it's not just like the game part of it is that it is generating a thing, whereas the essay prompt is just generating the work that you are doing. But the game is generating a conversation between you and the writer. Even like implicitly. And that is part of what makes it a game.
Let me ask you this. If I present you a solo game, a solo journaling game, and it is just a 1d6 game, right? The only thing you do is you roll 1d6 and you get one of six prompts. And that's what you're doing every time. If three of those prompts are negative and three of them are positive, is this a randomized success mechanic? Or am I just having you write an essay? Like, does the distribution and probability of what I put within that prompt set make a game for you? Or do you think that that's not doing what you're talking about?
What you have described to me is an essay prompt and not a game. What in this situation prompts the next roll after that?
So you've just set what you're going to do via the prompt, and then the game helps you determine if your action is successful.
Interesting.
I'm not that kind of narrative person. If you can't already tell, I like to have a little bit of the control taken away from me.
Well, it's interesting. Control is an interesting thing here. This is like this when I think about solo games from a game design perspective, is it's like what I think the game design is here for me is like I have created a set of prompts across different randomizers, and the game that I have created for you is that you will get a certain subset of those prompts, and the way they interplay will lead you to a specific kind of story that is half me and half you. And yes, you are coming to it with a lot, but like if I've done my job well, the interplay of those prompts is game and like does create that narrative arc for you. Like where you're saying you're not really that much of a narrative guy, I think a good solo journaling game helps like you come to a narrative, even if that's not where your brain naturally goes.
I think Elliot and I, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, but I feel like we both feel that the game part is that there's guidance. So whether that's from the prompts or from the dice, like there is pressure being exerted by the format of the thing that is pushing or pulling or in some way influencing the player in a specific way. Whereas a journal prompt asks you to do none of that. There's no push or pull coming from a journal prompt. So even games that don't have success mechanics can still be games because there can be a push and a pull somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's like this is where I get, and this is getting into the definition of game, unfortunately. Sorry, Max, but like it's like the idea is like if I create a list of 20 questions for you to answer, and in answering them in that order, it creates a game-like experience. Is it a game? I don't know. Like, that's like, have I done my job as a game designer? This is like where I'm like, how much game do I have to put? And this is something I think I've designed a fair number of solo systems, and I'm always thinking about like, how much game do I put into this? Like, how much does it need game, and how much does it need prompting and reflection? And like, where is that balance? It's interesting. I'm not convinced I disagree with you, and yet I feel emotionally like I disagree with you also because of having made a solo journaling game.
I think you mean solo journaling prompt.
Oh, watch it.
I'm wondering also if this is like person dependent, you know, like if people, depending on how much you like being guided by something, is how much you might interpret this as being prompted or not prompted. Like, how much of yourself do you like to bring to stuff?
I mean, isn't that what all of this is? We're all just stating our opinions.
What? I thought we were here to get to the truth.
I'm bringing objective facts. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, yes, everyone will differ on this, certainly. But I when I play a game, I want there to be a reason that I fail. I want there to be a decision that contradicts what I want to do. Even if I'm given the prompt, I want there to be something that says, not no, you can't do that, but maybe you shouldn't have done that.
Interesting.
For me, it is about it's not as much about the game and the random, it's the consequences of my actions.
You want conflict. You want a game to give you conflict. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be like big or bad conflict, but there just has to be something, because that's off. Conflict is what drives narrative.
I am begging every person listening this to listen to Ursula, listen or read Ursula K. Le Guin's essay, The Carrier Bag Theory of Fiction. Please.
Ooh, I'm looking that why, up after why? This.
I don't.
It is in direct opposition. As she would, God, if she was still alive, she'd be the best spice cabinet minister ever created. but it's in direct opposition to the idea that story needs conflict. And her point was just, it's easier to write story with conflict, but story is a mechanism for meaning, not conflict. So get good, Scrubs. In the words of her,
I'm gonna have to go home and. I'm going to have to go downstairs and think about that.
I'm thinking about, like, and I think about game mechanics here. Like, I think that, like, randomized success modifiers is one way to make a game. I think that, like, gauges or, like, filling up a bar is another way to play a game. And then I think, like, journaling prompts can sometimes play in that, like, filling up a bar kind of idea. You know, like, in a game where you're okay. leveling up. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And it's like, and I think that what you do to fill that bar can sometimes make it a game. Like, they, like there's hidden game mechanics, I think, in journaling games that are maybe that take a bigger step back than success that still make them game. And I'm thinking video games. You said you're a video game guy. Mm-hmm. Like a linear single player game. It's like, that's a predetermined story, right? But it's still mm-hmm. a game, right? Like, it's still a game. Yeah. And I think maybe what you would argue to me here is that, like, can I die in that game? Am I fighting bad guys? Like, yeah. But, like, I also think about, like, visual novels. Are those games, you know, like, they do have a kind of subset term of visual novels, maybe for a reason, but, like, yeah. I don't know. I'm torn on this one.
Well, with that, shall we, do y'all want to rank how spicy you think my take is of solo journaling games that don't have a randomized success mechanic are essay prompts?
I'm going to say like a 7 on this one, because I think what okay. it comes down to is I think there are things that are labeled as solo role-playing games, which are actually just essay prompts. But I think that the lack of a success mechanic doesn't disqualify it from being a game. I think there's just some of them maybe aren't quite game yet.
Yeah. I'm going to give you an 8 for similar reasons.
Okay. Well, that is a 7.5, which is, as of now, the highest score.
The spiciest pepper in the cabinet.
To recap what happened today, Elliot's Your Book Does Not Need a What Is an RPG section got a 4.5. Linny's The More You Edit the Mechanics and Crosstalk Out of Your Actual Play, it starts leaning towards becoming more of a movie or audio drama take.
Well, a bad one.
Is that good?
Specifically, the more that you remove crosstalk and game mechanics from your actual play, the more you risk making a bad movie or a bad audio drama.
Great. Mm-hmm. That got a 7. And my solo journaling games that don't have randomized success mechanics got a 7.5. So as the Secretary of Spice on this episode, I brought the spiciest take. Thank you both for joining me today. Linny, Elliot, what do y'all got going on? Where can people find you?
Yeah, sure. You can find me anywhere at Twice Rolled, Twice Rolled Tales, or Twice Rolled Press. And you can also find me at Linny Shell pretty much everywhere. You should check out our new game, Punderworld, which is finishing up the last late backers on Kickstarter. And just generally keep an eye out in the next couple of months for the Twice Rolled Tales channel. There's going to be some fun actual play news out there.
Woo!
I am Elliot. I have been Elliot. I will continue to be. You can find me anywhere online at More Blueberries on pretty much any social media that matters. If I'm not More Blueberries, I'm not there. You can find my games at moreblueberries.shop, games like The Time We Have, Project Echo we talked about today. We've got two new games coming out, All's Fair Ooh. By Dylan Apelian and Rise Wizards by Robin Ekberg. Those are on pre-order, should be available by the end of the summer. And if you happen to be listening to this and you're at Origins this week, I am at Origins in Columbus, Ohio. So come say hello.
Once again, thank you both for joining us. This has been the Dice Cabinet. Check out our Patreon next week for more, a continuation of this, for more spicy takes from this crew. And hey, with that, the cabinet is closed.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Mage Hand High Five. Want to show your support for our show? Want to hear us talk more about it? Then check out our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. We've got all kinds of goodies from $2 if you just want to show your support, to $5, which gets you extra stuff like homebrew content, early access to merch, and a whole second extra podcast, Mage Hand Down Low, where we talk about the behind the scenes of the episodes. And then if you really want to go to the distance, our $10 tier includes all the above, plus monthly live streams and creative content from the cast that you can't get anywhere else. Check us out at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. Thanks to Jacob Kirzner for our music and Shane Smith for our logo and our cover art. Check out our website at magehandhighfive.com and look for us all across social media. We are on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Discord, Blue Sky, and wherever else we may be, we're going to be there at magehandhighfive. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. It makes a huge help. It says a little screw you to the algorithm, and it helps us get found by new listeners. So please head on over and do it. And those who have already, thank you so much. We love you. And now I'm going to shout out all of our original and up high subscribers over on Patreon. And I'm going to do it in one breath. Crimson Crown, finding new ways of making Robin regret giving me this power, so I'll make it as long as possible. Fear me, Robin, Michael, Carey, Marinette, Malty, Azure, Luke Sharples, Miranda Koppel, Jay, Theo Wells, Wade, Lindsay, Dale, Heimbecker, DM, Dippy Fresh, Tar Zelda, Deborah Jacobson, Jackson Maurer, Ocarina Sonata, Mads, Jellycube, Morgan Vapor, Kathleen Ayers, Kellen Wuber, Trout Relief, Mac, Patrick Heppingman, Debbie, Nathan the Ritter, Trick and Too Tasty, Evan Noon, Avery Spar, AM Lovelies, Alison DeVavis, Dust Carpenter, Diana Bacon, Al Forstoki, Liz, Carrie Lee, Jonathan Gunn, Tyler Gardner, Elder Soldier, Alada Pang, Laura Kickman, Alan, Sammy Richardson. Oh, I found a new approach. I apologize to those of you whose names I blipped over in the process of it, but I think I'm ready for more challenge. So here we go. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your foes about the show. Tell renowned character actor Kyle MacLachlan about the show. I don't even know if he likes D&D, but if he does, and if he listened to the show, I would be enormously happy and could just die. So do that. And when you do, use the hashtag MHH5. And hey, how about high five?